Hey, what's up? It's Avery here. Well, I guess who else would it be? It is my own show. You see, my show is on platforms like iTunes and Spotify, and you may wonder, how do I get my show on these platforms? Well, I do it through an app called Anchor. It's free to download, and you can use it on your phone or on your laptop. And it also comes with creation tools that let you edit your show. You can also make that sweet moolah with your podcast with no minimum listenership. So, want to get started? Download the Anchor app on the Google Play Store or Apple's App Store, or go to anchor.fm. It's that easy.
Yo, 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 what is up? What is up? What is up? Welcome back to Avery Sports Show. As you all know, I am covering the Canadian national team's games against Costa Rica and Mexico. So I want to have on someone who's going to be there and who has been one of the faces of One Soccer doing play-by-play and also on the sidelines covering Team Canada games. It is the one, the only, Adam Jenkins. Adam, how are you doing today, buddy? Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's been a super, super busy day. We just finished taping One Soccer today a couple of hours ago, so we had one last checks and balances in the studio before the show goes on the road. And then I did a radio hit with TSN Edmonton to talk about the games, and now this is my nightcap. I'm really looking forward to it. So I'm on coffee number four. I got to get home. I've got to finish packing, see how many suits and jackets and paraphernalia I can fit into two suitcases, and then we fly out at 8 a.m. So it's a 6 a.m. trip to Pearson for this one.
There you go. You know what, though? The good thing is, though, is that even though people are saying, you know, oh, Edmonton's going to be cold, it isn't that bad. Training today was -3 for training, so it could be a lot worse. For this time, Adam, it could be -10 or -20. So -3 is a victory, I think, for in terms of weather for a reporter.
For the reporter, yes. It kind of takes away a little bit of the cold weather tactics that John Herdman was trying to play. But I've never been to Edmonton. I've never been to Alberta more than 20 minutes as a layover in the Calgary airport. So I'm super excited. But from what I know, the weather can turn on a dime. So just because the forecast looks kind of positive now, I'm not getting my hopes up, especially if the games sell out and I have to go back on my Twitter promise from a month or so ago, and I'm not allowed to wear a jacket during the game. So I want it to be sold out. I'm willing to do it. But if it doesn't, maybe I won't die of hypothermia.
Maybe you won't. So Adam, you know, the national teams.
The women's national team, for great reason, has been the story of Canadian soccer for many, many years.
But now we're seeing the men's team, just like we're seeing like people, like we're looking at possibly over 40,000 fans for the men's team, which in my lifetime, like it wasn't a thing. Like you didn't see that could be happening. Like, what are your thoughts on the fact that, you know, for these two games, we might get a crowd for both games against Mexico and Costa Rica of over 40,000 fans in Commonwealth Stadium here on Friday and next Tuesday?
There's so much about it that I haven't been able to wrap my head around yet. And I think I could be wrong, but I think it's a pretty safe assumption that this will be the largest attended event in Canada since the pandemic really struck, if we do get the 45 to 50,000. So obviously it's going to be incredible. Like I try not to think about it too much before I go to bed about what it's going to be like to be 5 feet away from the benches in that environment, because I get too fired up about it. This is the dividends of the job. This is all the hours of prep work and broadcasting, and this is sort of the glamorous, incredible, amazing part. So I'm so excited from a personal perspective for this team. I always go back to, they are on an accelerated trajectory. 2026 was always supposed to be this coming out party that we're seeing from this team, this their way of running out onto the global stage and say, we are Canada, we are not a laughing stock, and we're also not just here to have a good time and to do our best, we're here to win these games. So the idea that a lot of people, and it may not be entirely fair to say that 6 points is an expectation against Costa Rica and Edmonton, but I would say minimum winning one game, and if you're not going to win both, get a draw out of the other one. It doesn't really matter if it's Costa Rica, if it's Mexico, and to have that many Canadians in one place for this team, it is incredible how far this program has come in such a hurry. And I don't want to go into the crystal ball and take away things you want to talk about, but if Ike Ugbo gets in, I mean, oh my goodness, what a coup that is for John Herdman and for this team to have a player who was courted heavily by Nigeria, who is a quadrennial favorite to be in the World Cup and to represent this team. And he could have, he was essentially, from what I understand the reporting and everyone we've talked to, he was basically promised, come play for Nigeria and you will play these games. You will get your minutes. We promise that that is something we can offer you. And for him to go, I think I'm going to go to this Canadian team. Not sure if you've heard of them, and most of them probably haven't, to be completely honest. So that coupled with Alphonso Davies and the social media post where he's still getting ribbed a little bit from his teammates at Bayern saying, oh, you play for Canada. Like, and there's guys who play for every top European powerhouse in the world on that side. And for him to kind of grit his teeth and go, okay, I can take my jokes. I'm still the young kid here, but also to have him say that fuels me. I want to be able to come back to Bayern and be like, look what we accomplished, look who we just beat. And then hopefully for their sake, come next November, they're in Qatar and they'll have a chance to pull up an upset or two. So Avery, it has just been the most wild ride. I think when One Soccer and Media Pro got the rights and partnered with CSB, we were hoping we would see this at some point. I don't think we expected to see it this quickly. So we are certainly incredibly grateful and happy about how fast they've come. And I'm just so happy for that team. And look, I'm sure there's so much that we can get into to dissect it further, but it's just such an incredible time to be a supporter of this team, of this sport. And you rightfully mentioned our women's national team has been kicking butt and taking names for years. So this is not new for Canada soccer, but it is definitely new for the sustained excitement around the men's national team. And to be able to do something that they haven't done in almost four decades is pretty incredible to be a part of.
It really is. You mentioned players. You know, I remember years ago, like the idea of a player switching allegiances from England to Canada, it wouldn't happen. It would just be a fictional thing. Like, what is it like to see players, you know, defending and playing for Canada and switching allegiances to play for Canada? A thing that 20 years ago would never, ever, ever happen, Adam.
Yeah, the only way it would have happened is if the player wasn't good enough for the country that they wanted to play for. And that's just a reality. They understand, I'm never going to make it in to use your English example, to make it into the England team. I'm just not good enough. There's too many good players here. So I have some affiliation elsewhere. This will be my chance to maybe play in a World Cup or a Gold Cup, whatever the confederation was. So you weren't necessarily always getting the top players at that point, just by virtue of there were bigger tickets that they were chasing. And Ugbo is the most recent example. Stakio was massive when it happened. It's a reflection of the work that's been put in, and the spotlight is rightfully being shined on this generation, the Davies, the David, and everyone. But I'm glad that Atiba's still out there, and he might even get his cap record this window, because you almost need that connection to the players who weren't able to accomplish it in the past generation to remind everyone, while we're having so much fun and it's exciting and they should be enjoying every second, for them to be able to lean on the veteran players on the team, your Boreans, your Hutchinsons, everyone, Vittori even I put into that camp, where they understand what it feels like on the other side of that pendulum, it's important. Having said that, one of the reasons why I think this side has found so much success so quickly is that they don't carry the baggage of failure and constant heartbreak. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be supporters of this side who've been a voyageur, who have been with the Canadian men's national team as long as they've been alive, and they haven't seen it. And like, I liken it to people, I've always found it's kind of curious where a lot of football soccer fans aren't necessarily big hockey fans. And there's almost a friendly resentment between the two sports. I mean, I've even got one of my first shows doing commentary for One Soccer, I mistakenly said goaltender instead of goalkeeper, and my mentions exploded. Like, that's not what we call goalies in football. And that was like my welcome to, you really have to respect the sport you're doing. And it's not that I didn't respect it, but it was a wake-up call to how passionate these supporters are. But they're not going to get too excited about World Cup. Gareth Wheeler today was proclaiming he's buying a ticket to Qatar if they get 6 points and all these things. But you're going to have people who need to see it, need to see the math to fully appreciate what's happening. So to circle back, it is just a reflection of how quickly this side has come in such a tight window against a lot of incredible odds against them. And I don't think Ike Ugbo is going to be the last player to glare for Canada and say, this is the side I want to represent, because they're making a whole lot of noise and people want to get in on the fun.
No, of course, and they should be. And seeing this team now, and what's fun is that you're seeing this Canadian team, Adam, they're going into places, like they're going to the States, getting points in America, they're going to Mexico, and they're getting points in Mexico. Like, other teams are realizing, oh crap, we can't be at home against Canada and roll them 2-3-0. This is a country now where we have to play our best, we might lose this game when, you know, again, going to the past, it wouldn't happen. But when Canada goes to Mexico now and goes to America and gets points, they are now a team that people have to fear now for us to qualifying for good reason.
Yeah, that's a bizarre thing to continue to think about. It doesn't seem real, to be totally honest, but that is the reality we're in. We saw it in the Gold Cup. I think the Gold Cup, in a lot of ways, was like the warning shot to the rest of the footballing world that this team has arrived ahead of schedule and they can't be taken lightly. And the result against Costa Rica over the summer, like, that shocked a lot of people. It didn't shock the Canadian players. Then they take Mexico, and if not for all of the controversy and ridiculous CONCACAF-ness of that match, they could have beat Mexico. They could have taken it the distance. And obviously, part of me goes, I would have loved to have seen the side win the Gold Cup, of course, but they almost needed that reminder that you are so close to accomplishing and being the best side in CONCACAF. Again, a statement that sounds ludicrous to say out loud, but to be, almost have that reminder on the road, like away from home. It was neutral, of course, with Mexico, but it was you're so close, but you're not there yet. And if you get to the levels that you want to get to, this kind of adversity is going to be there. You have to play every single second, no matter how much extra time is awarded and you think it might be a little bit silly. You got to go to the distance, and they should have won the game. They didn't. And that was sort of the heat check for them, that we're doing really well. We probably shouldn't have been in this game when you take your Canada supporter hat off, aside from the locker room, because of course they have to believe, but that was humbling in a way. But look, there's so much confidence around the Maple Leaf right now. And it's just brilliant to experience. And even like, not as a reporter who's going to be between the benches, but just as your average Canadian who's falling in love with this team, who may not have been a massive men's national team supporter up until 2 months ago, or maybe we're going to have a few thousand this week coming up who fall in love with this team after seeing them in person. It's wonderful, and it's well-deserved. And the credit goes to Herdman, the staff, and the players for just taking ownership of, sure, we're going to have a World Cup in 2026, but we want to show everyone we're ready now.
Of course. And, you know, I want to go back to the game in Toronto, Adam, the Panama Canada game, probably the wildest game yet they've had for qualifying. Just what was it like being down there, seeing, of course, the first half, the shenanigans, the chaos? And in your mind, was that the most complete second half they've had? Because when it was 1-1, you know, I was still a little tight. But when that second half started, when they blew that second half open, it felt like a team that really changed. Because just seeing how it wasn't just Alfonso, you saw other players chipping. You saw guys like David Buchanan step up. And of course, the Alfonso goal, where he was, what, a good 30, 40 yards away from the ball, steals the ball, keeps it in play, gets the shot off and scores. I think, to me personally, that was the most complete half of soccer they played so far in qualifying when they beat Panama 4-1. And
yeah, that's a tough one, because I think they've turned in some good performances, like against the Americans. Even I think in Nashville was a really complete half of soccer, but that one was the most eye-catching, no doubt. if they go through and qualify, I'm not ready to say they're going to, but I'm confident that they have a great shot. But if they get there, that Alfonso Davies goal, as you alluded to, just the fact that we can say the Alfonso Davies goal, and everyone just goes, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, in the 66th minute against Panama, will be the reason this team qualifies for the World Cup if they get there. It was like an awakening for everyone in the stadium. The roar, the feeling, seeing everyone on the bench lose their mind. And that will definitely be the turning point if it goes. And even if they come up short, which would take a pretty big stumble, I think, or a falling back into the stratosphere from where they are right now, that's still going to be an iconic moment forever. And you need those. You need those viral moments where every major media company in Canada, a lot in the US, across the world, really, are playing the Alfonso Davies goal, because, as you rightfully alluded to, it's an 80-yard run. He goes 37 kilometers an hour and tightrope dances and spins to just disgrace that that Panamanian defender. I love the visual and the memes of him just kind of standing there with his arms outstretched, like, what on earth just happened? Especially when it went in. I think he knew he was going to be on the low light reel for all of eternity at that point. But yeah, that's going to be one of the moments. They were fantastic. They deserved everything. And it was so nice to see everyone chipping in, for David to get his goal. He is performing in Europe to a level that not many Canadian strikers ever had, yet it just hasn't come off for him so much yet, wearing red, white, and black. of Canada, and to see him get a goal, it was amazing. Tejan, I think he hung in the air for 5 seconds when he went for that header, and it just, like, it was suspended in air, and just the technique on the finish, like, in any other world where, I shouldn't say any other world, but like in any other country situation where we don't have Alphonso Davies or we don't have Jonathan David as Canadians, Tejan Buchanan is a world-class player. Absolutely. He would be the one stealing all the storylines and the headlines. So I was really happy for him to get that moment. And you're right. It was a complete team performance. And I think it's one that they'll be able to lean back on when things aren't going well, or if things are tight in a match, they need that moment. They'll be able to remember, once we get it, we can unlock something, and everyone else just has to watch out and hang on for dear life. So that was amazing. The environment was incredible. Getting kissed by John Herdman was not something I expected to happen in that day, but he came over for the interview and just made eye contact with me. And like, you could tell, like, I would love to be able to bottle up what he was feeling in that moment and be able to sell it, because it was the eyes, it was the body language, it was this arrogance that he had so incredibly deserved in that moment. And I looked back to my camera operator just testing audios, and I saw, like, congratulations, John, turned my head again. And he's like right in my head, kissing me on the side of the head and ruffling my hair up. And I said to him, I said, John, you understand that the list of people who are allowed to touch my hair is very, 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 very small, but you're on the list, so it's all good. So that just to be a part of that moment with him and to share it, and the Voyageurs deserve a ton of credit, because the first three matches in that window, Canada got off their bus and they got booed. They got booed by the traveling support for the other country that was playing that day, whether it was Honduras or El Salvador or Panama, because obviously the GTA in Toronto is a very attractive destination for diverse communities. And I think those are the people we still have to win over, the Canadians with proud heritage of their country of origin or their parents' country of origin, who are still fiercely proud in football of where they come from. So those people are slowly starting to come over, and I think we can get them eventually. But to see the Voyageurs do such a great job, and it was a concerted effort with Canada Soccer to make it a sea of red. Because I remember the game just immediately prior to having Panama and I believe it was El Salvador who was here second. I walked out of the tunnel just before kickoff. I'd gone to grab something from the truck and was coming back, and I was kind of looking down, and then I lifted my head just as I came through the tunnel, and I literally saw two blue shirts for every one red shirt I saw. And the players after the game, like, they got the result, but they were like, this can't happen. We need you. You don't understand how important you as the supporters are. And they rallied around it and they brought it. And I expect Edmonton to be as fiercely red and proud as BMO was for that last match out. And it is important, like the 12th man, whatever, you add the number of players on the playing surface plus one for the supporters. That's a cliche across sports, whether it's the Seattle Seahawks or what have you, the sixth man in hockey. But it makes a difference, especially in this sport where visiting games can be near impossible to win, especially in CONCACAF. The Canadians, and it's coming, but the supporters need to take the ownership of the importance that they play in these games. And that was my big takeaway, was just the sea of red and the flags and what that support meant to the players on the field.
No, of course, it was massive. And of course, Adam, I mentioned you are being in Canada, you work for One Soccer. And
for you, what has it been to be a part of this network, which is the soccer channel for the next generation? And you guys have done some great work on One Soccer so far.
Done CanPL work, Canadian national games from different leagues around the world. Many years ago, we wouldn't have been able to have...
Because One Soccer 15, 20, 25 years ago, it just wouldn't have worked with the content you guys are bringing back then. It would not have been feasible.
Yeah, it's been one heck of a roller coaster. Since I got accepted to Ryerson and decided that I was going to put my dream of being a pilot in the Air Force on the back burner and give sportscasting the go that I wanted to give it, I have made it a personal mission to always be the hardest working person around. And I don't always accomplish that, because there's some incredible people in this industry who've been here for decades, and even colleagues of mine, like one of my really good friends from Ryerson, Victor Finley, the things he's been doing with the hockey side of things has been incredible. And I use that to push myself, because I walk into One Soccer, they actually recruited me, which surprised me. One of the first contact I had from Media Pro was one of our marketing managers back then, Salim. Slim is his name. And I'm not trying to throw Slim under the bus, but he filled out the contact form on my website and it was littered with spelling errors and punctuation. And I genuinely thought it was spam. So I didn't ignore it. It was something to the effect of, we're starting up a new TV channel in Canada and we would love to interview you, audition you to be a part of it. And I was like, no way. I'm 22 years old. This isn't something that is coming my way. And then like 2 days later, my boss for a while, who recently retired, Victor is his name. He's like, I believe my colleague reached out to you and you never got back to us. And I was like, oh my God, what have I done? Have I blown this?
It wasn't spam. It wasn't spam.
Yep. I was like, that was my shot and it's over now. So it was good while it lasted. I'm going to go apply to the Royal Canadian Air Force now. But no, they brought me in for an audition and it went well. And look, I felt like when I started, I, like many people, played soccer for quite some time and played it relatively competitively, never at a high enough level to talk about it with Terry Dunfield or Ian Hume or whoever sharing the commentary booth with me. But I knew the game, but I didn't know the game. And it was very apparent to me early that I had a long way to go. So I've immersed myself. Like I'm a diehard lacrosse, rugby, hockey fan. Those are my three other sports outside of this one that I love. I don't know that I've watched many games other than football since I started, because I care enough and respect the job enough that I want to be as fluent in it as possible, while also understanding that I approach it from a different way than Gareth Wheeler can, or Alf the Blastis can, or whomever is doing play-by-play or whatever the role is. I'm not going to be the same host that Andy Petrillo is. I'm going to have my own spin on it. And I think that's super important. But I sort of felt like when I got the job offer, not only did I not believe it, but it was like there was this really high speed train or the subway moving by me. And I just reached out and grabbed onto it. And I've just been hanging on. That's what the first year felt like, to be completely honest. But I every single time I come in to work to do a game, whether it's sideline reporting or hosting a show or commentary, like I am appreciative of the fact that, as you rightfully point out, this would not have been possible before. And there are so many incredible soccer and footballing people that are out of work or in a different role than what they'd like to be. And so for me to have this opportunity, I really wear that responsibility. I take great pride in it. And it's just every day is a learning experience. When I was in Air Cadets, when I was 15, 16 years old, I went on this brand new 6-week course. And that was my first time experiencing something new like that. And I got used to the bumps in the roads and everyone who's there, whether it's the people running the course or taking the course, all having ideas on how to make this thing perfect and great. And I wish it was like this right now. And that's the case with any startup. And then I go to Ryerson Sport Media. It was a brand new degree. And there was a lot of similar things there where they're still ironing out the curriculum. And so that was one of the reasons why I was so confident to take it, is I knew I could do it. And yes, it is not exactly always the perfect show. I still don't think that exists in broadcast. And I'm sure you can attest to it that doesn't exist, but everyone in this staff, and we are a very, very, very small team relative to your traditional CBC Sports and TSNs and Sportsnets. Like the one soccer staff is about 20 people. So we are a really small group that gives a damn, if sorry for going there, but we care. Yeah. We care. And it's just every day is a new challenge and we're always introducing new technology and trying different things. And look, we have incredible senior leadership here. Like, and to be I think it's the only way that something like this could work is when you have a renowned historic property and brand like MediaPro to say, we believe in what you guys can do here. Here is the money you need. Here are the resources you need. And we're going to grow this. And it's wow. I can't believe we're almost through three seasons of the CPL, as much as last year wasn't a proper season with the Island Games, but right. Just think that we're almost at the end of the finish line for 2021 and how far we've come so far, the deal with Sportsnet and the times we've simulcasted on TSN and CBC, like those are massive. So as much as I try and avoid being on social media when they announce that the game can be seen on One Soccer and everyone's like, why isn't this on TSN or Sportsnet? And I understand where they're coming from, but it gets frustrating because it almost feels disingenuous or unintentionally disrespectful to the work that so many people behind the scenes and our small team are trying to do, because we stepped up when no one else wanted to. Like it's on public record for the longest time that, and I'm not trying to shame TSN, because I think like Luke Wildman and the staff there and KJ before he came over to us, like they were Canadian soccer for so long, but Bell made an executive decision that it wasn't a priority for them in the current landscape. And obviously there's pandemics and everything around, but MediaPro from Barcelona came in and said, we are going to be the ones to do this. And I think that shouldn't be lost on people that there is that belief and there is that support. So it is a roundabout way of getting back to your original question where what's it's been like. It's been a roller coaster. It's been the most incredible 3 years I've ever experienced in my life. And I'm excited to see how far this can take me and can take the network.
Well, you know what? Hey, great answer, Adam. You know what? You went a long ways, but hey, that was still a great answer, no matter what. And of course, you've been a play-to-play voice for this for One Soccer, you along with Gareth Wheeler, Brendan Dunlop before. So I got to ask you, like, what was that first game? Like, when it really hit you that you were going to be a play-to-play voice for a professional soccer league, when that really hit you? Was it a week before? Was it a day before? Was it during the game? Like, when did that really hit you?
there's two ways to answer this. One side of the coin is it hasn't hit me yet, and it's almost been three seasons of it, because it's such a dream opportunity, and I thoroughly enjoy it and being able to try different things and to really discover my own voice, because I think everyone will approach it differently, but when you learn how to do commentary, there isn't like, I went to Ryerson, but there is no, okay, so in this minute, this is how you're going to intro a show, or this is how you're going to do this. Like, they give you the foundation and the theory, but everything else is just go. Someone counts you down from 10. Yep. They say cue Adam and you go. And when you're in a solo booth, remote shows, it can be difficult to capture it, especially at the beginning. So I felt the pressure of it from my audition, and anyone who's familiar with TV will know what IFB or talkback means, but basically it's how your associate director or your producer is able to communicate with you. And I'm not convinced that this wasn't done intentionally, but during my audition, they left the talkback on and my talkback wasn't working. So for the 25 minutes of, I think it was a Canadian Championship Forge York 9 game that I was basically redubbing just to see what I would do.
Yes.
And the entire time I heard the control room just chatting, talking about the long weekend and talking about what was going on. And I genuinely think they were trying to test me to see how I could handle if something wasn't to go right. So I felt the pressure immediately. And somehow after that, I was offered the job. And look, I watched every game of the CPL that had happened prior to me starting around Canada Day. And I took notes and I was like, ooh, I like this cadence, or I like this line of thinking or goal calls. And I've tried scripting goal calls. I've tried scripting full-time outros throwing. I've tried just doing it completely different. And I'm always evolving the way I try and approach things. And this season, especially, I think I've done every other CPL game in 2021. Gareth, he just had a baby, so he's obviously not as available as I am right now. And Alf has been incredible. Matt Cullen has been amazing. But I've been on every other CPL game, and then Canadian Women's National Team friendlies, the celebration tour. And every single time you do a game, it's your chance to get better. And I will, not necessarily immediately after, but I always go back and I watch the game. I typically know now whether I've had a good game or a bad game, but I still go back and I review it and I take notes and like, I look out for things like catchwords, where if you're saying the same thing over and over and over again to describe something, and I'm always working on extending vocabulary and just trying to be better. And it's been great. I have a lot of support here, and for Gareth and for Andy and KJ, even as he came in, to really embrace me and welcome me as soon as I've been, like, I have to pinch myself sometimes and think about how fortunate I am to be 25 years old and to have this consistent, reliable gig doing commentary, and also having the opportunity and the trust to go do sideline as well for the Canadian men's national team. So it's all invaluable. When I think I made it was probably the end of last of the Island Games last year, when I knew it was my last game, and it was a really good semifinal. Points were on the line for everyone. And when I signed off, I finished the broadcast, I felt accomplished. And every now and then you'll get a goal that'll go viral. And you'll still get the people who aren't used to a Canadian or American style of commentary, who are like, who is this person listening to Canadian commentary is laughable. And you just, all you can do is laugh at those comments, because everyone has a style. Like, as a commentator, like, there are people I prefer listening to more than others, but I understand what goes into it. I would never have a bad word to say about anybody, but you're never going to please anyone. And once people started to really, like, they fill up your mentions, or you see the YouTube comments sometimes when you check the video, and when people know your name well enough to say they don't like you, I think that's when you know as someone on air that you've made it, because they're familiar with it. And it's the only job, or one of the few jobs in the world, where people feel entitled to have never met you, to have never interacted with you, and go on social media and destroy your work, or say that they're not a fan of you. I've always thought, like, there's been so many times where I want to respond and I never do. But I've always said, like, okay, let's say you're an accountant, or you're a lawyer, or you're a grocery clerk. Imagine if someone followed you around, and like, if you dropped something or said the wrong thing, the first thing they did was tweeted it and tweeted at you to tell you that you screwed up. 90 times out of 100, we know when we do something wrong. Like, we do this for a living, so we know when we aren't at our best. But that was the other one. It was the end of the season, to know that I got through another year, and I felt so much better than the tapes I watched back from 2019 and the spam on social media. It's way more positive than it is negative, but I always laugh and I go, okay, I think you're starting to make it when people are that confident to come at you on Twitter.
I couldn't agree more. You know, I've done commentary for hockey. I've been on air talking soccer, rugby, basketball, and I've faced those comments, you know, this Avery guy, his voice is too high. What's he talking about? This? I've been there. I've seen, you know, just the endless stream of tweets like, he sucks, he's awful. You know what? I've said before, if you have no haters, you ain't popping.
I like that. I like that a lot. Sorry, I just had muted you. I muted myself. I didn't want you to hear my slurping of coffee. I'm on a long day, but you're exactly right. And the other thing too, and I think it's an important perspective, and like I said, like, the majority of feedback I've received has been like way too kind, and I feel sometimes like I don't deserve it. But I will always say, if someone is watching a game and they don't notice you, and that can sometimes be a good thing. It's like the referee discussion in football. Right. If you're not talking about the referee, it means the referee's had a good game. Or if they're, most people aren't tweeting and say, that was fine, like, I didn't not like that. They're not going out of their way to say that. So you're really only seeing the tip of the positivity and the negativity. And like, we know the ratings, we know the numbers we get. Exactly. And I'm pretty sure I'm not getting flooded with dozens of thousands of people saying, meh. So all in, it's been an incredible amount of support. And at the same time, like, I expected that. You have to have a thick skin to be in this industry. And I say the same thing when I've been asked to speak to high schools or universities about what it takes to do it. And that's, it's just a reality of the business.
Exactly. No, it really is. I'll come up for you here, Adam. And so you mentioned the Island Games, and just, you know, like, 2020 last year in sports, like, our lives got thrown for a loop so much. Sports included.
Why? What happened?
Well, you know, a small issue I heard about that.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah, that. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The entirely, it's weird because, you know, when 2020 began, I filled out my accreditation for FC Edmonton like normal, and then bam, things get changed. I'm hearing about, you know, CanPL taking the entire season to PEI. And just as a broadcaster, as a reporter, it's hard enough doing interviews all through Zoom for an entire year. But as a broadcaster, like, what is that like, you know, when the entire league goes to PEI and you got to do things remotely? You know, in person is no longer a way you can do things anymore. You're watching a screen. You got to, like, watch half a game because you can't see everything. Like, how much would change for you compared to being able to, you know, go down to a stadium and do your job as you would pre-pandemic?
Yeah, it's definitely thrown the world upside down. Full disclosure, since I've started at One Soccer nearly through 3 years, I've not called a game in person.
Oh, wow.
Every single game I have done has all been off tube, as they would typically say, but it's all been remote. That's just the structure we have. And when we do have triple header days, it allows me to be able to call two games because I can't get from Halifax to Victoria.
That's fair.
In a flash like that. So the reality of the situation is I don't know any different with football. I've called two football games in person, and they were Ryerson Rams, Carlton Ravens, and Ottawa GGs back in 2017. So this is all I know. Obviously, I'd like to be there. I'd like to be in the community. It makes it for a better, more polished broadcast. And like, we get caught every now and then, like, to use the Eddies game, for example, were you watching or were you at the 3-3 with Valor?
I couldn't be there, but I did watch the game. Yes.
So do you remember, though, the Azriel Gonzalez, the 3-0 goal at that point?
Yes.
So the camera cuts to a tight shot of Gonzalez, and I see Ungaro passing the ball and I see him shoot it. And if I didn't have my effects mics cranked up as high as I did, I don't know if the ball goes in or not. So it's little things like that. And because it is very literally, like, if you are watching a game at home and you mute it and you do your own commentary, like, that's what we're doing. Now, we obviously have more resources, a couple monitors here and there, and the ability to talk to the control room. But that is what I know. So for me, it doesn't really affect a lot of what I do on a day-to-day basis. We haven't been able to travel as much. I was supposed to be in Guadalajara for the Olympic qualifiers, that trip got canned because of obvious health and safety reasons. So little things like that. And I think where you really notice it is on the players when they're in these quarantined, isolated environments. And especially the kickoff this year, come week three, week four, like you can tell in the body language and texting with a lot of them and the coaches, like it kills your morale. And as much as the league and the teams do their best to keep everyone loose and fresh, like that's definitely the toughest part. And that's when you can see it come through. If you're 35 minutes into a sluggish 0-0 game, like it's not going to improve. The guys just, they don't have it that day, and that's totally fine. So that is where I notice it the most for what I do. And then we did One Soccer Hangouts as a YouTube show just to have content going. And that was the beginning of the pandemic. And then we have only in the past few months been able to come back into studio to do One Soccer Today. We've all had our home studios, and it's great to be able to shower, go to your studio, turn everything on, turn everything off, and then you're still home and you're ready for the next part of your day. But it doesn't feel as intimate and connected as when things were pre-pandemic. And there's been a lot of good things to come up with it. Like, it's convenient as all heck to be able to hop on a Zoom like you and I are doing right now and do right. this podcast virtually when schedules are packed. So there's some positives for sure, but yeah, that has been my experience with the pandemic and how it's altered what I do.
Interesting. And before I let you go, Adam, I do want to talk to you about, as we mentioned earlier, Forge. They have been by far the model team of CanPL. Won a title the first year, were a threat again last year. And again, here we are, 2021. They are again the class of CanPL. They've had international success in the Champions League. What has it been like to see this team pull away from the rest of CanPL and be the model franchise with a great manager in Bobby Smyriotis, who I think personally will get a job eventually in MLS, I think, one day.
Yeah, I think I would be quick to extinguish some of that. Because the only reason I say that, and like, I could be wrong. I know Bobby well, but I don't know him intimately. I don't know his inner thoughts and what he wants. I think eventually, sure, he wants to test himself at the next level. That's what the players want. That's what the league wants for itself, is to be a development league. And he's proved to have built a dynasty. If they win again, no one will be surprised. If they win CONCACAF League, I don't think many people will be surprised. They've forgotten how to lose. They are that good. I can totally see Smyriotis making the jump. I see him going to Europe before I see him going to Major League Soccer. But again, that's not insider knowledge or reporting that I know something that everyone else doesn't. That's just sort of my gut instinct. But I kind of think to myself, why would he want to leave right now? He's built this thing. They're going to go to Champions League next year. I don't, like, depending on where he goes, I don't think he's going into Champions League at his next job. So I think he should reap what he's sown, and he's done incredibly well. And the whole staff has, I think David Edgar has made a massive boost to this team going from a playing career to the beginning of a coaching career. Cause he's just such an incredible personality. And he is one of the people that toes the line of, I know when to yell and I know when to be quiet. And he pulls those strings and manipulates it so well. But you're right in saying that they are the class of the CPL until proven otherwise. Now we're about to enter, once they get through their last games with Edmonton and Cavalry, they're going to go into a final where they have one bad 90 and they're done. And that's the rolling of the dice of the playoff format. And they're fully aware of that. But no, what they've accomplished, like, I don't think you'll see a run of sustained success like this. Once they lose for the first time, and maybe that's 2030 when there's 18 teams in promotion and relegation in the CPL. But when it happens, like, we're not going to see this run of success again. And they deserve all the credit in the world for what they've accomplished.
No, they really did. I'm sorry, I lied. I have one more thing for you. I saw it. It dropped today.
Please.
It dropped today. The big news, the talk of expansion. We are going to get a Vancouver team for 2023. What are your thoughts on that? Because I know I'm a big expansion guy. I love the fact that the CanPL expanding more and more. Just what are your thoughts on Vancouver? And do you think this team will do well in Vancouver proper? Because we know MLS is actually in Vancouver. So I want to see this team is actually in Vancouver proper and not, say, a Surrey or a Burnaby or Abbotsford, for example.
Yeah, I think they've intentionally left that vague on purpose, because I genuinely think the ownership wants to shop it around to the different municipalities and say, where can we build a stadium? Where does it make the most sense? I was a bit surprised, to be completely honest with you. I think we found out, like, on the One Soccer side of things, like an hour before the announcement, or like, it was very, very late. And the CPL keeps expansion cards really, really close to their chest, especially after previous expansion leaks have happened. they don't want to do that again, but I say that in jest, of course. I'm only kidding. But it caught a lot of people off guard. I think it like it, I understand the idea of it for the market. And like I said, I expect it to be not in Vancouver proper, but I could be wrong. I truly don't know. But what it shows me is that it's a reinforcement that the ownership the CPL has is amazing. To be able to weather the pandemic, to have two seasons go through whatever they had to look like, and now have another group own a second team and continue to invest. And they've been very clear that it's Josh Simpson and Rob Friend who are going to stay with Pacific despite being in this coalition of the new ownership in Vancouver. And then the other gentleman, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but the other gentleman involved, he's based in England, but he's going to run Vancouver. So I think it's easy rhetoric and conversation to think that Quebec City seemed obvious, or Laval or wherever in Quebec, because they're due. I think the one thing that I caution people on there is that there's going to be a lot that goes with a team in Quebec. And I was saying this last night on the Twitter spaces that we did after York and Forge, but for there to be a team in Quebec, the league's going to almost need to double in size. One soccer is going to need to almost double in size unless the league does a French language subcontract or sublicensing with another. And again, I don't know any of this. It's all hypothetical right now, but there's so much that goes into giving that team the coverage and the path and the route that they deserve. So I honestly didn't think it was going to be Quebec, but I also don't know how much is going on behind the scenes and how close they are to being ready. My gut said Fraser Valley. That was okay. Where I thought it was going to be. I was interested as well to really dig into the Saskatchewan situation and for Klanikin to so blatantly say Vancouver will be nine, Saskatchewan's not ready yet. And they don't have their stadium, and they're not as far along in the process as I think anyone hoped. Pandemic is obviously not helping that, but that's a whole other conversation. So I think that team's going to be well supported. I don't think it will be in Vancouver proper. I could be wrong. This could be on freezing cold takes, but I think it will be outside of the city, and it's going to be incredibly well supported. It's the biggest thing that I want to be the takeaway from this is that, yes, you may feel discouraged that it's not the market that you're from and you want a team, or it's not the market you wanted it to be. Expansion is good for everyone, no matter what. It's more money into CSB. It's more money into the league. It's a step in the right direction. I have no doubt in my mind that with the investment from Media Pro as the global rights partner and the owners that have poured so much of their themselves and their money into this, they are going to get to their goal of wherever they want to drive this thing. And I think once they reach that sweet spot of 14, 16 teams, there's going to be people that go, now we need Div 2, bring League 1 in and promotion relegation. And like, as Team Chaos, I love the idea of that. I don't know that that's what's going to happen, but that's for years and years down the road. The big takeaway, like I said, is that any expansion is good expansion. That team is going to be well supported. Josh and Rob and the 6-5 group has shown that they know how to do this with Pacific, because from where Pacific started in 2019 to where they are now, the investment in the stadium and the Pacific Academy, the Wave program they have out there, has been amazing. And they've captured being the Islands team. And I think that's really important, that this is not, two Vancouver teams. And like, I understand that it's the semantics, but they're important. Right. Pacific has a proper brand as being the Islands team, as they should be. And they're so well supported. And to see a couple Victoria kids get through and to have a kid from Comox playing goal for a year and a half was amazing. Like, that's just another success story for them in Nolan. So I think all in, it's good. Any expansion is good. We'll get to more. We'll get to the numbers we want it to be eventually, but just take your win. It's okay to celebrate a good thing.
No, I agree with that. Adam, it's been a blast talking to you, buddy. Before I let you go, I do want to let you plug any work you have coming up, any social media projects, like, you know, plug your Twitter, plug your IG, whatever you want to plug here. This is your time, Adam, to plug.
Oh my goodness. My IG game is awful, but I do have an IG. It's the same as my Twitter, at Adam K Jenkins. That's where I try. If there's CPL news or commentary that's to go on social media, it's at Adam K Jenkins. Last night we did Twitter spaces for the very first time. Yes. That was this completely impromptu thing. I was literally just on Twitter as I was having a coffee at a cafe in Streetsville yesterday, and Alexi Lawless was doing a Twitter space, and I jumped in. I was like, this is amazing. We need to try this. So I tweeted at that moment, I was like, I'm going to try this. I'd expected maybe 20 people. I think we had like 200 viewers come in and out. And what I love about that is that it is like digitizing a tried and true successful media thing, which is the radio call-in show. Because when I host those, in the case from last night, I've already talked to you for 90 plus minutes. You don't want to hear more from me. I want to hear your opinion. And that's what I love about it, how easy it is. You just throw on your phone and talk. So expect more Twitter spaces. We're going to work out a way for it to be on the One Soccer account as well as mine for further reach. But in the meantime, maybe we'll do some in Edmonton at Adam K. Jenkins for it. We'll be at first round in Edmonton on Monday if you're going to be there for the matches, Costa Rica and Mexico. So we would love to meet you. Come out to first round. We're going to do a panel with the One Soccer crew and the Eddies game as well when Forge is there on Saturday. So I hope to meet as many of you as I can. And that is the end of my unrelenting shameless plug. So thank you for the opportunity, Avery.
No problem. At any time. Been a blast talking to you, buddy.